Keel Bergen tells the candid story of her growing awareness and ultimate escape from a Catholic cult and the fallout that followed as her life unraveled. The name of the book is Holy Unraveled, a memoir, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Keel Bergen to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me, Joe.
Give us a sense of when you knew that you wanted to slash had to tell this story.
Well, I had really been processing my childhood for a very long time, and I had spent years and years going abroad and talking to women about empowerment and starting and being on boards and really trying to empower them. And what I realized is that I was asking them to tell their story, but I hadn't told mine. And so it was hard to begin, but I started just writing down on little pieces of paper my memories and kind of throwing them in a box, hoping that would help. But I really realized that as that box started to fill up, I realized that it was I can't ask you to tell your story and release your pain and your shame if I'm not doing the same in my own life.
Did that thought really start to occur after the escape? Meaning once you escape the cult, once you escape that and you move on to a new life, that you say, okay, now people should know what I went through?
Yeah, I wish I had thought about it that way. It really was that it was time for me. I had healed enough. I'm a strong believer in EMDR therapy, and I've been through that for about 12 years. And fundamentally, this book is about healing and radical transformation of your life when you decide to heal. And so I was ready. I had healed enough that I could be out there talking about it, and I didn't have a trauma response to it.
So you were born into this cult, which your father was a leader at the Disciples of Light. So tell us a little bit about this organization, and when you started to realize that this perhaps was not a normal way of being brought up.
Sure. Well, the Disciples of Light, yes, my father was the leader. He was the Shore District leader, so he was in charge of, dozens and dozens of families. It was a very strange way to grow up. It was really, like, the women were called handmaids of the Lord, and so they were just told what to do. So I kind of watched my mom in this slow, process of, losing her voice, and it was tragic. It was awful to watch. It would start with things like she had to wear long prairie skirts, and then it was, no, you can't highlight your hair. And then, I remember kind of the last bit of color dripping from her face when my dad said she couldn't wear lipstick anymore. And so it was very male dominated. It was arranged marriages, things like that. And when I realized it pretty early on, I couldn't say anything about it because that would bring more trouble, but I was an observer, and I would hide under the boardwalk and watch the ocean and listen to the people above me walking and telling their stories and listening to little girls talking with their dads. And so I knew that there was something different about my family because I wasn't allowed to do any of that. I was sometimes told anyone under 30 isn't allowed to speak for 24 hours. And I was just a little girl. I had a lot to say and learn and questions, but I wasn't allowed to speak.
Were there set rules because it sounds in reading the book that some of these were made up on the fly?
They were definitely made up on the fly. So
yeah.
What I learned later, much later, was really it was my dad playing God. And that's how I came back to my own spirituality, is that it wasn't God making these rules. God had nothing to do with it. It was my dad trying to be God that was tormenting my life.
You write about two women who were very important to you. One was the housekeeper, Shirley, and the other woman was the best friend of your mom. Her name was Helen, and these were women who would ultimately could get away with breaking the rules.
Well, Helen specifically, because she was, and it was a dear friend of mine's mom, and she was in the community, but there was something about her that people just didn't tell her what to do. She wore what she wanted, and she would show up to what they called the general community gatherings, and she would not pray in tongues, and she would stand, and she was just herself. And I would look at her and think, that's who I want to be. Not her per se, but I wanted to figure out who I was and allow myself to just be who I was. And then Shirley was amazing. She was our housekeeper and nanny every day. And she would come. She had her job before that was, she picked cotton from the time she was very young and escaped from that and came, and she couldn't read or write, but she was strong and she was full of love. And she gave me this resilience, this, you can do it. You can do this no matter what he does to you. Cause I know that she knows some of the abuse was happening. But she would give me this gift of resilience. And I feel like from her, I took that we have to take our traumas, because no one gets out of this one without, out of this life without some sort of trauma.
Right.
But if we can take that and not let it define us, and instead turn it into something as beautiful as you can. And for me, writing this book is about, I want people to tell their stories, especially the ones they don't want to say out loud, so that they can give a voice to that darkness, and they can start to heal from whatever it is that they went through.
Finally, when it comes time for you to go to college, you are away from your family, and this gives you tremendous freedom. But it doesn't go that well. What ultimately happened, do you think?
I think what ultimately happened is that I had never had boundaries before. And so here I was on my own, and I think I didn't feel a sense of worthiness inside of myself. So I was chasing anything that looked like it could fill me up, anything that looked like there might be a boundary at the end of it. And so I unfortunately chose a path of drugs and very bad decisions until I was pretty destitute, very destitute. I had been evicted from another apartment that I had rented in someone else's name. I had lost my car. I had very little money to my name. And I realized, you're going to die. If I didn't change something, I was going to die. And I finally got scared into helping myself.
That helping yourself included going back to the church.
Isn't that ironic? I'm not Catholic anymore. I have a very an awesome spiritual life. But I ended up in a Catholic lay apostolate community. But here's the irony. I was silenced as a child, and I paid a high price for that. But then there was this place called Madonna House where I lived in silence for a year, but there was such power in that silence because that's where I healed. I got quiet and I was held in love. And yes, it was Catholic and it was very structured, but all they were about was love and mercy and taking care of one another and serving one another. And there was no refrigeration. There was no plumbing. I could only shower once a week. It was so cold going to that outhouse in February, but it was that silence that healed me and the power of the love that they showed, not with talking, but just that energy of love and service to other people. And that's where I decided I needed to be of service to others so that I could be of service to myself.
Were there people there who were equally damaged from prior experiences?
I'm sure. I'm sure we were all walking around with our own level of pain and abuse. And like I said earlier, I don't think that there is a life without suffering, but we can take that suffering and make it into something. And my great hope is that everyone, there were 150 people there, and I lived in a dorm with 75 women, and I literally had 8 hangers and 2 milk crates to put everything I owned in. That was it. And that was enough. So I would hope that a lot of people had that same experience of healing.
But obviously, your early life is an extreme, and the life after college was an extreme. It is not an integration into whatever normal is.
No, it was different. But as this book has come out, the outreach has been incredible for people who are saying, "Oh my gosh, you sparked a conversation," or "I finally told my mother that I was raped when I was a child," or these amazing stories of people now beginning to talk about what happened to them. And one of the things that's happening is people are saying, "Oh, I didn't go through what you went through, but And to me, I say, you know, abuse is abuse is abuse. I mean, I'm not trying to level up or level down my abuse. Whatever you've gone through in your life that was traumatic, that is really traumatic to you. And so what happened to me, yes, it's traumatic. And yes, it's probably, it might be worse than other people's, but it's the worst that happened to me. And it's what we do with our traumas that's more important than trying to say, oh, mine's worse than yours. Or, you know, we're not on rungs on a ladder. We just need to support each other and get to that place of healing.
As part of that healing was reconnecting or at least coming to terms with your parents part of that?
That's a really interesting question. I don't have any contact with my family of origin except for one brother who's awesome, who's not in the book. He's 12 years younger than I. The hardest person for me to forgive, and this is through, you know, my father threatening to kill me and being raped and all of these terrible things, the hardest person for me was my mother, because I've always wondered how things would be different if we could have just talked, you know, and if she would have taught me how to be a woman, or if during after the rape she would have believed me, believed the doctor when the doctor told her that I had been sexually molested. And it was awful to not have that person, that woman who's supposed to nurture you the most of anyone in your life. So it took me a long time to forgive her, but I have. I can say that I've forgiven my mom and I've forgiven my dad.
But forgiveness does not bring with it communication.
It does not for me. No, I hope it does for most, because it's extremely sad to not have contact with my family of origin. But I've also created my own beautiful, I have three boys, and my family is so important to me. And I've chosen friends. I have 25 years strong that they are my family. We do all of our holidays together. Our kids, I think our kids think they're blood cousins, you know, because we're that close. And so I've made a really, really happy life. And that's the other thing I want people to know, is there is such happiness once you walk through the abuse and you really tackle it. You can have an amazingly fulfilling and happy life.
Did you have to come to terms with religion and spirituality?
I did. I have no qualms against religion at all. It's not for me, because I don't, like, take Catholic Catholicism, for example. The rules of Catholicism, of things like, you know, contraception and things like that, I can't buy into not using contraception, for example. And I have my beliefs don't go with the rules. And so for me, I gravitated to my own spiritual practice, which is meditation. So I have my own level of church that I go to. And it's meditation classes 3 days a week, where I go really deep inside and I ask for clarity, and I ask for, you know, a deeper level of healing. And I ask to be, I really want to make a profound impact on the world. So I meditate on things like that.
You spoke of boundaries a moment ago when we were talking about you going to college. Are you comfortable with boundaries now?
I am. I really am. I have a solid structure, kind of. I mean, I don't have rules of things I'm allowed to do or not allowed to do, but I think one of the gifts of my childhood was a really strong intuition, because I had to be on red alert, you know, because I didn't know what was about to happen at any moment. But the gift that that gave me, when I talk about turning trauma into beauty, the gift that that gave me is this real sense of steering my own life through my intuition, knowing what steps to take, knowing in the first 7 seconds which decision I should make, and going in that direction. And I'm really grateful for that. And I try to hone that skill a lot, and also try to give it to others through my B-Tribes business or just my friends, that we can all share our experience and our strength and our hope with each other. And I try to do that as much as I can.
The name of the book is Wholly Unraveled. That's Wholly, Wholly Unraveled, a memoir. Keel Bergen, I thank you very much for sharing with us. A great pleasure to have you on the program.
Thanks so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Again, the name of the book is Holy Unraveled, a memoir by Kiel Bergen. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.